Hello and good evening, everybody. Welcome to our regular Monday stream.
Hello, we're
Hello,
back.
we're back. Yes, we're very back. Very, very back. Sorry, I'm just making sure that everything is running correctly while I'm doing this. Because yes, I've had people talk about it in the past, and refreshing does help. So
Yes,
if it gets to 7 o'clock and we're not on, do refresh.
I see someone in the chat is already asking the pertinent question for this evening's stream. So, are we all just going to die then? Yes, you can all go home to your families.
As everyone's gonna die, man. You know?
And we'll see you on Wednesday.
Yeah, we'll see you on Wednesday. Good night. We're back. It is not over. We are in fact back. I don't know, we've not really got I guess a lot to show today apart from the normal stuff. We'll do our normal preamble and say that there is still written content in the works.
Yes.
For those of you who want to check out the Substack, that's also quite a way to support us. We are still fully monetized somehow, despite our best efforts otherwise.
It's because we love the nation of
Yes, we
Israel.
must recommit ourselves to our appreciation.
Daddy Netanyahu.
Yes, our appreciation of the nation of Israel. That is, I believe, what keeps us going. We are fueled by Zionist energy.
Yes.
No, we are not. But it's a it's gonna be a relatively brisk one this week.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff we're going to go over here, but we expect a lot of the things we're going over to be a bit of a given. And also, some of this will seem like extra stuff because what it'll allow us to do is cover this stuff again next Monday from a different angle, I believe that would be.
Yes, part of, a lot of this will be, it won't just be set up, but some of this will be set up for next week, in terms of the less obvious stuff, let's say. But thank you for the £5 there, John Morton. Good evening to you. If you would want to support us without paying the Google tax,
I would, I was going to say I'd pin the thing in the chat there.
yeah, the best way to do that is to support us via PayPal directly. I haven't found a better way to do it right now because a lot of the older alt services seem to be having trouble. Or at least they have trouble hooking up with our
Yeah,
stream, so.
we tried an entropy thing and it basically just did not
It
work,
would not
so.
take, unfortunately, for some reason. It might just be because we have a UK PayPal account or something. I don't know what it is. But no, we unfortunately couldn't seem to set up an entropy thing.
But yes, thank you to the folk that turn up to the streams and like and do the algorithm summoning dances in the comments and all sorts of things that mean we know you like the streams and you support us in making them. Which means in turn we can try and make them better.
Yes, a lot of people have been talking about the weather in chat. It is quite nice weather here in the north of the UK right now. It's about 20 degrees, but it's not too muggy. So we are going to start sweat boxing because, you know, there's children playing outside and birds cheeping, and you know,
Yes.
we don't have the regular urban noise. We won't hear ambulances going past generally, but
No.
you will hear like children playing, people generally being community-wise.
The
So.
odd dog or
Yeah,
cat
the
sort of
odd
making
dog,
a
but
noise.
cats have been loud recently. We've been hearing some very loud meowing for some reason, and we're not quite sure why. I think one of the cats is just quite vocal in the area. But
Feed
that's not,
me.
yeah, roasting.
Feed
It is
me.
roasting up north, and we have just roasted
It
some
is not
nasty.
grim. It is roasting.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Sun's out, pints out.
exactly. Dangerous day to be a Theakston's.
Very dangerous diarrhea, for instance.
I suppose we can kind of maybe start from like very basic principles here. And the point I think you made, I don't know on Twitter, but I saw you do it on Telegram, which is that net zero, much like zero COVID, is from the get-go, a nonsense idea because man literally produces carbon as he lives and breathes. He almost exists in a certain sense to turn complex carbon chains into more
Simple cut,
simplified
yeah.
or more complex carbon chains, and in doing so, survives. I mean, in a certain sense, you could probably take so much of like molecular biology and chemical stuff and this, that, and the next thing and just break it down to that.
10 years ago, I would have been quite surprised with the whole cows thing, because I thought they weren't going to go that direction, as in directly blaming living organisms, because that's a bit of a hat tip that this whole thing isn't true.
It's not so much that this isn't true, it's that they know they're playing with absolutism, and
Yes.
that they're only playing with absolutism because they're pretty much betting the farm on the fact that they will control how that absolutism is dealt with, both in elite discourse and amongst the public. Which is another element, I think, a lot of the eco stuff is that people don't want to treat the propaganda properly, which will be partly a bit that we'll discuss this week and also a larger part of next week. But as you're going to say here, you know, even those people that were living in like the Bronze Age, living off the land literally as it was before them, with almost nothing tool wise, no vehicles, basic fires, were not net zero. All animals, including of course humans, create CO2. It is impossible to undertake industrial or agricultural activity without the production of carbon or the broad range of greenhouse gases. So we can sort of take this forward for the rest of the stream and the one next week of thinking, well, there's only one or two possibilities. Either there are a committed subset of people who are full Pol Pot, or this is a trick.
There's a wild card I might throw in at the end, in that there is a possibility, a very real possibility in my mind, that in some places the inmates might start running the asylum. We saw it somewhat in Sri Lanka, and we saw it, although that was pushed by external forces, but if you especially have a second or third world country that has bought into a lot of this global governance stuff, you could have like a Biafra level, Ethiopia level man-made famine with a lot of this stuff.
Well, yeah, it's as you've got a note. I don't know if this comes up in the next slide or not. It's impossible to undertake industrial activity or agriculture activity without the production of carbon or the broad range of greenhouse gases. So this means that if you are engaged in a national carbon mitigation program, you've already sort of justified intervention anywhere.
Well, the next little slide here is a quote from a report that we'll be using more heavily next week, but I want to get this into people's minds. Also, this has a great, basically just communist paraphrase in it. It's very mask off. But this is from J.K. Boyce. He's part of the Department of Economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where I have actually been. Weirdly enough, I've been to UMass. I actually got the bus there at one point, but that's kind of by the by, one of my weird U.S. adventures. But the principle behind carbon dividends is straightforward. The amount that each person pays is based on his or her use of a limited resource, the atmospheric space for carbon emissions. This is one of the only places I've heard people name that explicitly as the resource.
Yeah, I'll let you finish that before we go into the wider point.
The amount that each receives is based on common ownership of the resource. We all own the atmosphere, man. From each according to use, to each according to equal ownership, which is quite literally a paraphrasing of from each according to his ability, to each according to his need.
But on,
which is the principle
of communism. It is communism justified by a Malthusian description of the environment and quote-unquote greenhouse gases, that they have essentially decided in sort of environmental economics schools of thought, which in and of itself is laughable, that because there is the environment, there is the almost infinite, untraceable sort of externalities that affect the environment that we all breathe in. We all breathe in this atmosphere, so we're all affected by the pollution all the same. So it's got to be a collective effort, and it's got to be a global effort, because global problems require global solutions, of course.
Well, carbon management allows governments to intervene completely in every facet of people's lives, from the food they eat to how they travel, and especially how they work. The endless, unachievable utopia of net zero is a blank check to managerial regimes to engage in unlimited management, or the planet and everyone in it dies. On it. We're not talking about Agartha. this process also involves the necessity of a global government to stop rogue nations simply ignoring this industrial suicide pact and out-competing the nations who install this restrictive system of total carbon.
Excuse me, John. The atmosphere has no borders.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
People will be very confused why you called me John there. A concept we will get to in another stream.
What, the fact that you're called John?
Oh no, I have been outed.
Doxed.
Going forward, you will increasingly hear the mantra of a carbon-constrained world. The idea is that carbon is a strictly limited resource that must be centrally controlled to prevent a promised catastrophe. That kind of goes back to this quote here where he talks about the limited resource being the atmospheric space for carbon emissions.
They don't know about the carbon cycle.
Yes. Well, basically, yes. They have invented a scarce resource you cannot touch, see, or physically own. You can't own your space of the air. It's like taking the roads with you. It is a manufactured malfeasant disaster for a resource that does not exist and one which by necessity must be enforced on every human on Earth.
See, having dealt with some of this stuff before, I already know that there is like the, and there is some ways to the argument it makes sense, but I am expecting like there like a large cohort of sort of libertarian people will come up and be like, well, I know how we solve this. We just privatize the atmosphere.
Privatize the atmosphere. Well, that quite literally was like people's property rights. But,
no, I just see someone in chat being John Monkey doesn't ring a bell. It's because it's John Scrumpington.
Yes, John S. Monkey Esquire. oh dear. Well, there's a that's the quote we'll get into later. Sorry, but that's kind of the backdrop we're using here. That is the premise of the stream. I think a lot of people are expecting us to explain in torturous detail the fact that net zero is not going to work.
But we've already been over this.
Yeah, we've already been over this. So
and
the
we even have, I mean, we can get right into the first example of this that we know is a worked example, is that they tried doing clean air zones and all these other different ULEZ things, which the yes. ULEZ scheme in London, as far as I can tell, seems to be completely falling apart.
It is, yes. But the outer boroughs are actually shitting themselves.
In the introduction of a clean air zone of ULEZ, yeah. What they have done is now set up complex camera networks, as we covered before in a demobilisation stream, across the UK, that just very conveniently divides, you know, each and every little bit of the UK up into its little 15-minute city.
Well, the worked example, the most, I guess, pressing example is transport. It is the car, and specifically the electric car, about how this process, one, isn't earnest, but two, shows what they really want out of it. We didn't really talk about general demobilization during our demobilization stream, because we're talking more about how a lot of the local schemes all interlock with each other. But one of the big ones we mentioned was the fact that the point of the Greater Manchester Clean Air Zone was not the Clean Air Zone. It was the installation of 800, by the way, automatic number plate recognition cameras in quite a small area.
Well, yeah, it would be.
This is a.
It would be the fitting of new cameras or the updating of old ones.
This is a. No, most of it's fitting of new cameras. This is less than a 30-mile span. This is about a 25-mile span here. And it has 800 cameras within it, and that is the point, is mass surveillance. I've tried asking a few people about this, because some people are, oh well, you know, I support the clean air zone, you know, but like, well, aren't you troubled by the implicit surveillance and all of this?
Yes.
Aren't you troubled by the fact that this has been used to set up a camera network you cannot escape if you drive basically in the northwest of England?
Yeah, but some really bad regression formula by a couple of doctorate students at the University of Manchester said it would save 1,200 lives a year.
Well, yeah, like I said, we spoke before about the ANPR cameras, but it really is a hat tip to the sharp end of policy in the pipeline that will force millions of people off the roads.
And we've seen, as we discussed from the example of the Scottish Government, I think they've got a Herald source.
Well, this is one from January.
But I think this
it's reared its head again in that the SNP is basically investigating pricing people out of the roads.
Well, no, I was going to say, though, this relates to the thing we covered before in the demobilisation stream, where they were very explicitly like, yes, we do want you out of cars.
Yes.
Which was them really saying the quiet part out loud that it seems a lot of councils and governments elsewhere haven't quite fully said yet.
Well, the conversation is changing before our eyes. In fact, this has been a relatively timely stream, because this article from January this year by Toyota has come back into the news cycle. We'll get to the example later. But the real crux here is that Toyota, the car manufacturer, as in the Prius manufacturer, one of the early adopters of what was the eco formula of car production, has really addressed the elephant in the room when it comes to forced electrification, which is coming to many US states along with most of Western Europe. It's the manufacturing capacity and also the mineral availability,
yeah,
namely cobalt and lithium.
Well, I was going to say, that's because Toyota, since about 2004, 2005,
yeah,
has been mining all sorts of dirty minerals in impoverished third world parts of Earth, and then proceeding to ship these minerals thousands of miles to and fro, you know, construction plants either in Japan or China, or ones in Europe, or the few that are still in America. And that throughout doing this in the last nearly 15, nearly 20 years, they've realised that it doesn't work. That, you know, shipping all this stuff around at exorbitant costs and using all these container ships actually creates possibly more CO2 than you would have had, say, just using old cars.
I kind of feel sorry for Toyota in this situation, because it's very obvious that some of their upper and mid-levels have not got the memo that this isn't real.
This is also, in some parts, what you could consider to be the Japanese government,
yes,
putting their hand up and saying, we're not really for this, you know, industrial suicide strategy you're going for.
Well, the basic fag packet math shows that there isn't enough lithium to power tens of millions of EVs. And they say here, it makes sense to share it out between hybrid vehicles. But again, that's another arbitration process. There's this idea of lithium management.
Well, yeah, no, I see someone in chat saying that, you know, not all hybrids need like the really bad like nickel, cadmium, cobalt batteries. But these will not count in future as hybrids. They will need to be plug-in FEV hybrids,
yeah,
which require the bigger batteries you have in an EV, which gets you back to the same problem.
Well, it's just them. They've come in and basically said what everybody else knows, in that there is not enough minerals and there is certainly not enough battery manufacturing capacity in the world to replace all the cars with EVs.
But that's an interesting little bit snippet they've got there. And a hypothetical model outlined to Automotive News, Pratt starts with 100 combustion vehicles that emit 250 grams per kilometre of CO2. If you have enough lithium to make 100 kilowatt hours of batteries, you could build one long-range Tesla, but the remaining 99 vehicles would still be combustion-powered, giving a fleet CO2 figure of 248.5 kilograms per kilometre. Spread that 100 kilowatts out between 90 traditional hybrids, though leaving only 10 plain combustion cars, the average drops to 205.
The problem is that people don't drive emissions figures.
No, well, no, of course people don't drive. But the general point here...
Oh, no, I know, yeah.
And but I think the same could be said for the carbon required to build the vehicles as well.
Yes. The big thing I've always stressed in all of these streams is once you do the closed system energy equations for all forms of green energy or green transport, they do not make sense because you need energy input from somewhere else, which is greater. They are net energy negative, not net energy positive. And that's always been my issue with all of the green stuff from being like 15, 16 years old. Yeah.
But of course, coupled with this, despite the fact that what we are literally reading here is like one of the world's largest auto manufacturer, very heavily in ties with the Japanese government, putting their hands up saying, this won't work, is that you have the other side of it, which is these sort of naive, well, sort of, oh, well, some of this isn't going to work. It's like, well, of course it's not. But
this is from the conversation, and I've labelled this the naive reading of the situation.
Academic rigor, journalistic flair.
Well, the title is just called "There Aren't Enough Batteries to Electrify All Cars. Focus on Trucks and Buses Instead."
Literally the worst way to go around it.
It is, yes, because high torque vehicles don't work particularly well.
It's more the weight you need to pull.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. You need the torque, you need the weight, you need the we're putting a lot of stress on an engine. Basically, this is what diesel engines are designed for. It's what they're extremely good at. What they've always been extremely good at is hauling heavy loads. But there's a one from the conversation here saying, oh, we need to focus on electrical trucks. You know, there's a lot of talk about basically turning them into trams, which would mean putting overhead cables over every motorway in Britain.
Don't we already have train lines?
Yeah, we already have train lines. They're already kind of a nightmare to maintain.
I do like this as well, and it's something that's been pointed out a number of times by people, is that whenever like shit lib technocrats try and come up with the ultimate transport solution, they always come back to just trains.
But trains are trains are kind of terrible in certain ways, because there's always the last mile problem.
But they always think, like, oh, how do we make sure nobody's driving them? How do we make sure they're always going the same speed? How do we make sure they're efficient?
Yeah.
Trains.
Well, the issue is, again, under public management, train networks always shrink. They don't expand. A la the beaching reforms. Yes, Britain had more trains when the government wasn't involved. Riddle me that one, Batman. But anyway, it just says we need to change our transport system and we need to do it quickly. It's a lot of this is like the eco simpering response to the fact that reality is being pointed out to them.
Yeah. Road transportation is a major consumer of fossil fuels, contributing 16% of all human caused greenhouse gas emissions. And that would be 16% of 0.2% of all the warming greenhouse gases in the atmosphere,
yeah,
of which the vast majority is water vapor.
It also pollutes the air, blah, 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 billions of dollars annually. At the same time, electric is getting cheaper. And everybody wins, right? Unfortunately, it's unlikely to be like that. Battery supply crunch. Electric vehicles still produce air pollution and greenhouse gases from their brakes, tyres. Again, there's some stuff that's mentioned in a later report we'll talk about, because the actual reality of net zero is a lot more dirt farmer than even this is making out.
Yeah, the battery production capacity currently under construction will allow the production of the equivalent of 40 million electric vehicles annually by 2028.
According to one estimate.
That is nowhere near enough to replace even like current fleet
stocks.
That's
just an estimate.
Yeah.
They have consistently fallen short and they have consistently had supply trouble. So that sounds like a lot until you see that the world produced nearly 100 million cars, vans, buses, and trucks in 2019 alone. So, yeah, there are around 1.4 billion motor vehicles in the world today, a number that will almost certainly continue to increase if we don't make major steps to shift.
Let's see that 40 million number is correct.
Yeah.
What they're saying here is that it's going to take upwards of 35 years to completely replace the current rolling stock.
And that's with, like, direct management of supply.
Yeah.
That's with, like, actual magical global communism and also no supply disruption and also infinite lithium and cobalt. But maximum climate effort. A lot of this is a bit earnest to talk about. Oh, it's a waste putting on all these scooters and lithium-ion batteries and we need management now. But
the bloody Tesla lorry.
Yeah, the fake Tesla lorry that never exists. But the upshot of all of this is that they are shifting the goalposts away from the magical thinking of everyone's going to have an electric car. Even the eco-lobby is now telling you very, you know, softly that you will just not have a car.
Yeah. Well, you've got it here for the next little RAC one. The glaring gap in policy is deliberate. It is impossible to electrify all but a fraction of the cars, even in Western economies, and electrification is slowly becoming law in like your big, dense inner cities.
Yes.
Therefore, the real goal of deliberate, unworkable policy is the demobilization of Western populations and the end of the personal vehicle for the average citizen. Insurance pricing has effectively already done this for all potential drivers under 25, as we discussed in the Zoomer stream last week, which it seems a lot of people really enjoyed. So
I'm glad they did. There's another one here, again from 2019. The Wall Street Journal, Germany's Dirty Green Cars. This story also factors into the second one here, which is... Oh, where's that gone? There's the whole point that Germany as well has been kind of pumping the brakes, as it were, ha ha ha, pun, on their whole electrification effort. But I think that's near the end of the stream, but I'll bring that in now as well. I think that was meant to be up here. But there was a report here that basically said what you said, which is the fact that building electric cars takes more energy than basically the lifetime of all the... If you were to replace all the cars in the world today, by their fag packet math, it would be worse for the environment than letting those cars get to the end of their natural life cycles, such as the energy input to create and maintain the electric car. We've known this for a long time. Top Gear kept making that point as well, which is true, that all of this is net energy negative. It's net pollution positive. Even within their own eco framework, it doesn't make sense. And that's what this kind of Wall Street Journal article from 2019 is really just saying. It goes into a bit more detail than that, but we don't need to go over that in too much. And that really has led to the past couple months from in March this year, German government in crisis over EU ban on car combustion engines.
Well, I think as well, much in the same vein as Toyota, was there not a recent thing, I know we don't have it directly to hand, from Volkswagen,
yeah,
very much a part of the German government, sort of put their hands up and said, this isn't going to work. Well, we're not doing this.
That's partly in here. This is about bringing in the electrification of the supply chains as well, which largely exist in China. People playing the, well, China isn't doing their part card, deliberately conceding the issue and providing ammunition for a future US-led war for the climate against countries that treat global warming like the bullshit it is. And that will be based at the stream on Wednesday. We'll be talking about the coming climate war, really, or at least the fake climate war. It means the climate cold war. Again, the energy equation within the supply chain do not make sense, and everyone has been talking about this. It has been something that has come up a lot in the past couple of months, that they are starting to move backwards themselves from this net zero position. They are starting to do the compromise from the big ask that is net zero. I also think, maybe not within the next 10 years, but at some point they are going to have to put the green away as well.
Yes, no, this is the thing. And it's going to basically take about another 3 or 4 decades before people realise the simple lessons we tried to put forward to them in streams like 2 or 3 years ago, which is that carbon mitigation is not the goal.
No.
Equality and inclusion is not the goal. The goal is always to set up a friend-enemy distinction that benefits the current elites in charge and consolidates their position in power. And that is all, that all politics is this. This is exactly what AA says when he says it's, you know, the ruling formula is BS, BS, therefore I rule. We are the great mitigators of carbon and the people who really care for the environment, therefore we rule.
The carbon wizards.
We are the great anti-imperialists and we wish for worldwide equality, both materially and socially, therefore we rule. It's over and over and over again, but I presume people in the chat at least get this somewhat by now.
I think they do. It's, again, the point is that the compromise being talked about here, about the German government in crisis and them not actually banning the construction of a combustion engine, which would completely cripple all haulage in Europe, because Germany makes a lot of Europe's goods vehicles, a lot of them. So that would completely destroy the capacity for Germany to have internal haulage and Europe to have internal haulage. So they've had to make some concessions to reality here. But this is not a victory. You know, they're not... You shouldn't celebrate the fact that Germany has decided that they're not going to cease all production of combustion engines after 2035, because the compromise here has been about the political project to completely destroy the German car industry. And the compromise has been, we won't completely destroy it. It is, again, an insane position to extract the largest possible concession within the bounds of reality. That's what this is testing. It is testing the bounds of reality with unreality. Again, just a few more stories.
Oh, this is based up. Mr. Bean.
This is Rowan Atkinson saying, I love electric vehicles and was an early adopter, but increasingly I feel duped. And he just brings in the points that we talked about today, which is the battery question, the supply chain question, Toyota's raising of the minerals and the production question, and all of the kind of dirty green car stuff that was talked about in the previous article. This is really just an amalgamation of it.
Yes.
So I won't really be reading much of this, but
what's his conclusion here? Does he? I want to see what sort of pathetic half kind of conclusion he's
Friends
got.
With an environmental conscience often ask me as a car person whether they should buy an electric car. I tend to say that if their car is an old diesel and they do a lot of city motoring, they should consider a change. But otherwise, hold fire for now. Electric propulsion will be of real global environmental benefit one day, but that day has yet to dawn.
Don't worry, the dream utopian technology will come.
We've gone to fallen back on the eternal kind of Bailey of the eco lobby, which is future tech.
Well, this is the same with the hydrogen stuff as well, because if you understand any little bit, as I mentioned before, about like basic thermodynamics, you will understand that the water vapor in the Earth's atmosphere has the strongest effect in terms of warming and reflecting heat.
Yes.
In terms of the actual light, which is how the whole greenhouse gas argument goes. So why would you want to then replace carbon emissions that have a very minor effect? I mean, you have one big volcano a year and pretty much the entire sort of Western economies, transport industries, in terms of global warming effect, is wiped out. So why would you then want to replace that all with water vapor that can actually be proved to have some kind of warming effect? It's curious, that.
I've got to say, Captain Smith, their post-Crump, he's had to read 196 Guardian articles this year. He said it at the bottom, yeah, because it does the cookie tracking. But yes, to be fair, we don't do the whole her silly Guardian article thing. A lot of them are actually to illustrate our point. And the reason I use the Guardian is that people can't really quibble with that. It's coming from a source that is effectively politically diametrically opposed to what we're saying. And yet they keep saying what we're saying, just with a slightly different spin on it, which is interesting. Also, The Guardian, outside of its kind of joke reporting, is relatively well written and sourced in many places. It's kind of astounding. It is like the largest media entity in the UK and has a large connection with the UK government, which is why it's able to get, one, so many stories first, and two, so many stories technically correct, let's say. If not right, because they are not usually right on things. But this is from yesterday. Once again, the life cycle of components rearing its ugly head here. Solar panels, an eco-disaster waiting to happen. They highlight the thing that I've been saying again for years about wind farms too, which is that the life cycle of all these renewable energy projects is 15 to 20 years if you're lucky. And the maximum kind of extended lifespan is about 25. So all of these solar panels from the solar panel kind of subsidy era, when I was a kid.
Are you telling me that the methods the government incentivized to stop an environmental disaster has caused its own environmental disaster?
Well, I want to
say it ain't so.
I want to plant this in people's minds, because this is going to keep getting worse. Because as we don't believe that the people in charge have like actual superpowers. They do not. They are just... they are in charge because they have inherited their position, most of them. And the reason we don't want closer management by them is because they are evil, yes, and they are Machiavellian, but they are also incompetent. They are not able to manage the energy resources of the planet effectively. They don't have that capacity. And we'll start seeing a lot more of this eco-junk. In fact, I believe this is going to be one of the biggest narratives going forward.
Can you imagine how they're going to have to scrap all the first-generation electric cars, which they decide that they're so legacy technology that we can't reuse the batteries, we can't reuse the gearboxes and the windings and, you know, any of the structure we've built to support a 2.5-ton vehicle?
Well, old electric vehicles are essentially old mobile phones. They have very little... They are useful for their scrap elements, their constituent elements, not much else. And that's really what's been created here, is a much larger disposable society in terms of the eco side of things. I will say that we are very, very, very much on Collapse Watch here.
Why?
I'll get Collapse Watch out. We just have it out all the time, but it covers up Evelyn, so that's a bit mean. Also covers up a lot of the stream too, so I tend to just flash up when I can. But this is kind of the first segment here. The big meat of what we are going to talk about really is the Tony Blair Institute's Nets Zero Vertical, because the Tony Blair Institute has been in on this for quite some time. I'll let you read through some of this. I've talked quite a lot here. But they have their whole slick net zero. But oh my God.
And they got the Lizzos. That's Cherie Blair doing her fucking tricks there, I tell you that.
Oh my God, they don't look like...
Bitches be like, how'd you know I was like for the Ivory Coast?
That's like the female equivalent of being sub-Saharan blue black. Look at those skull shapes.
You probably get some great thumbnails in some of these if you keep going.
Somebody
down.
Get the calipers out.
But I think that there is articles in here from as far back as like 2019.
Many of them,
I believe. And if we go to one of their main ones, which I think we'll probably have to come back to a number of times, because I think there's a lot of framing devices in here that will cover how the green issue will be handled literally for decades to come.
Yeah, this is the Tony Blair's Institute kind of big policy document on net zero and the politics of net zero in this. It's called Temperatures Rising, Avoiding Division on Net Zero. There's some bits you wanted to pick up on here.
Yep. I believe there's one right from the start where, as those watchers who are familiar with what we'll do will know about the New Britain and the
yes.
Our Future of Britain initiative, which is a large part of what the Tony Blair Institute is doing at the moment.
It's basically them doing the granular
policy document. I hate how slowly the website loads. This Web3 fucking garbage. It doesn't even work on my phone.
It's basically their version of New Britain. It's here again, guys. New Britain's back.
Well,
it's this
is
future
where the,
of Britain.
This is where the New Britain stuff really comes from.
Yes.
But they are already setting out that it's the six pillars: prosperity, transformative technology, and net zero.
As opposed to the five pillars.
Yeah. They're setting out net zero as this sort of given kind of paradigm that already has been solved. And if we go to the second paragraph in the summary there.
Yes.
They're already talking about, it's not about whether or not we need to debate the issue. It's about maintaining a broad coalition of support is essential for both the success and cost of tackling climate change. The net zero transition cannot be delivered through government decree or public sector action alone. Reaching net zero requires a rapid innovation and the mobilisation of vast amounts of capital, both on a scale that can only be delivered by the market economy. This approach has already led to green revolutions that have exceeded expectations in solar and wind energy, battery and electric cars. And what they are saying there straight away is, of course, the public-private partnership.
Yes.
That much as this is a global problem that requires global solutions, it is also a problem that requires both public and private solutions. So there must be some kind of symbiosis between the two here to make sure that this works, of course.
This is a very clear signal as well that they are going to reward their friends economically.
Yes.
There's a large amount of language in this that is coded towards the fact of this is going to be the bonanza for you, the reader. If you are smart enough to get in on this, you can make yourself rich before they put everyone in the pot.
As Walrus in the chat has pointed out, classic tone. We're already behind. We have to get on to this.
Yes,
he knows.
It is very, very classic tone.
If we keep going down here, there'd be one of the next sentences, I believe, just starts with the word confidence. There we go.
Confidence is key, yes.
But it is also fragile. It relies on a degree of consensus that can be hard to attain in modern politics and even harder to maintain. Now, what someone there has basically been on by Tony Blair on the shoulder and said, we're never going to get this green crap to work if people think the green crap's woke.
Yeah.
So that I would actually be, this is something we can look into maybe a couple of years from now, honestly, but the deliberate separation of technocratic green policy that is neutral and woke nonsense that's somewhat eco-friendly but unworkable.
Well, that's the separation between the Climate Change Act and Just Stop Oil.
Yes.
Just Stop Oil are there to make the Tony Blair Institute look sensible. It's to make this look sane. That's what they're there for. It's very obvious. Even mainstream people talk about it now. But Extinction Rebellion, Just Stop Oil, all of these people are caged and fed by the government. Because they are the big ask. They are the unworkables, as it were. They are the public face of silliness to make those in charge who are bringing forth the neutral solutions, in quotes, look more sensible.
Well, yeah, they go on here. The end of Boris Johnson's tenure as Prime Minister and the risk of net zero becoming a political football in the contest for a new Conservative Party leader may have ramifications for years to come, irrespective of the outcome. The commitment to net zero is being openly challenged by would-be leaders only serves to undermine the confidence
that has
been carefully nurtured over the last few years. And there's two points there, as you said. There's the classic sort of Schmitten point of, we are the neutral, you know, it's the Tories are being political about net zero. Net
yes.
zero goes above and beyond politics. It's just, it's that simple. And also here, I think when they say confidence, what they are discussing is what we have referred to a number of times before as the conservative given. The sort of 10 to 15% of people in society who do have a somewhat real job, do actually have to deal with things that are interpersonal, not wholly managed by some sort of managerial structure.
Yes.
And in doing so, have a different worldview. But they are the direct sort of cohort that someone like Tony Blair appeals to. And by him, through his little minions, suggesting that they need confidence in their net zero plan, to me seems like we need the backing of the conservative given.
They do. They need the backing of corporations, effectively. They need the backing of business.
Yeah. And before we get to the six, because the six recommendations at the bottom was the main bit I wanted to look at, because they're talking about how they do a little sort of poll with people. But they say at one point as well that those seeking to undermine net zero may be successful in delaying the transition, but they cannot hold back the tide and will delay come higher costs, missed opportunities, and a prolonged crisis.
This is the language of COVID.
Yes.
Is what this is. This is the point of, like, look, you can stall us a little bit, but the more you stall us, the more painful it will be for you. That is actually just a threat.
Yes. No, it's an unveiled threat, which is why there is very clearly a friend-enemy distinction that yes. will be drawn up around this. Because if we go down to the 6 points, you've gone all the way to chapter 2. Yeah, just these ones here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These to me sound like we need a stronger propaganda campaign to streamline, consolidate, and crystallize the narratives of environmental action in people's minds. And we can even see that they're doing that on one of the later ones. The public urgently needs reliable, impartial, and practical information. Fill the zone.
Here we go.
Consolidate the narrative.
In response to COVID-19 and our proposed home energy service provider potential models. Again, they talk about, there's a deliberate mention of the COVID-19 response, because this really is like the neutral fact yeah. check.
Public dialogue and demonstration are essential to consent. We must show the people, and we must show them that we are doing it, and we must get them involved in the fact that we are doing it, because otherwise they won't like it.
This is, we need to get a like Blair Maoism image back up.
Yeah.
This is like pure Blair Maoism. He's talking about the engagement of the people with the activists.
Government must provide an honest but optimistic vision of net zero. I'm not even going to read or think about that anymore. That sentence on its own should tell you honest but optimistic is Alistair Campbell. It's spin doctors.
It's pure spin doctors.
Policies should target multiple benefits but not hide behind secondary ones. Policies and messaging should be targeted at people's primary environmental concerns and aspirations, not be hidden behind claims of green jobs and global leadership. That's saying throw liberalism away.
Yes, it is.
Don't make it about economics. Don't make it about efficiency. This is bigger than that.
Literally make it about saving the world.
Yeah. Politicians cannot avoid discussions on costs and fairness. The government needs to take a clear position on costs and its approach to fairness, which we've seen before. This is the same thing we discussed in the New Britain stuff. Oh, decentralisation, whatever new plan they've got has to be applied equitably.
Yes.
You know, silence is likely to lead to assumption that costs are worse than reality. Just keep lying. Don't ever let the narrative fumble. And then last there, decisive issues require pragmatic, not purist positions. I.e., don't make ourselves look like the absolutists. Let some other people look like that. And they talk here about what they refer to as, you know, supportive, closed, and middle-value voters.
Yes.
Now, these seem to be categories that they've already worked out. And a little bit above this, where they have their first introduction and the kind of poll that they're doing, which they analyse throughout this whole vertical, they talk about people with more culturally open values. Now, in my mind, when they say that, what I'm hearing is that that's their key target group to consolidate the narrative into action.
Yes.
Because they're already saying here that culturally open people or people with culturally open values were more comfortable with eating less meat. These are people who are more indifferent, more moldable, more perceptible to the messaging. So they will focus on these people as essentially their radicals.
Yes. But they talk about the issue of meat consumption as an urgent but divisive issue. So that will be hidden. That will be, again, that will be one of the last things that is explicitly brought in. But they are very much using the language of the big ask and the false compromise here. They're basically talking between the lines. You wouldn't be able to make much sense of this if you didn't know that that's what they were doing. There's all the Tony Blair Institute stuff is excellent at using double language. And it is excellent at using it to communicate to two different audiences, to the outside and the inner party. It is quite brilliant in its both its banality, but in its specificity in many areas. There is, they must agonize over the language in some of these, and that's how it reads. There was a €5 donation here from Christian. Thank you, Christian. Says, the short lifespan of products will forever be excused by the next generation having enough of an advance to cover the gap if in needed resources. That's been true for a long time, but as systems begin to actually break down and you physically cannot replace your car, I believe there's going to be much louder kind of calls for a fairer solution, let's say. But that's kind of on purpose.
But I think we can move on to the next source we've got here, because we've still got quite a bit to go, but a lot of this is just going to be us reading from the next two or three.
I don't want to go over this in too much detail. There's a lot of stuff here. There's a very famous report at this point from a working group of, I think, four different universities called Absolute Zero, which is it is the honest vision of what net zero would actually be. It is the extreme position from which they can row back from. And it demonstrates that by some of the absolute, like, welcome to the rice fields Pol Potism here. Because that's what all of this is extremely, extremely welcome to the rice fields. There he is.
All right. I wonder what you were looking for.
No. I was looking for Mr. Franco.
I see.
I've just put this as like Pol Pot politics.
But see, this
welcome
is,
to absolute zero.
This is how you create like sort of new political paradigms, though. You engage from one end, like the Tony Blair Institute does, in a sort of perfect managerial fashion. The language is clean. You have to basically be someone who is like Reg Schmidt and all these different thinkers to see within it what they're actually discussing. And then the other end of it is like this crazy Pol Pot, like, you know, you'll be lucky if you're a duck farmer and you have a bicycle attitude. And what we are seeing is a cohort of elites who are basically pushing both of these at the same time.
Yes, they are.
Knowing that we will reject one and accept the other.
This is the big ask, but this is a surprisingly honest appraisal of what the UK Climate Act is asking for.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to go there.
I'll go through this. The Absolute Zero report is very honest in the fact that it admits that there are no methods of reverse emission and carbon capture. That is the conclusion of the working group of multiple universities, and one which has long been known. Therefore, net zero doesn't have a mitigating side. Therefore, when they say net zero, they mean absolute zero, because you cannot reverse emit. The report is also the first place I've seen climate scientists really just say the quiet part out loud. Where is it here? So I'm in the wrong window again. This report is a little bit... it's quite badly formatted in some places. So I'll bear with me a sec while I find the section I'm looking for. But here we go. What we mean by absolute zero. So this is them kind of coming in with a proper definition here. The UK Climate Change Act contains two escape words. It discusses net emissions and targets on those that occur in our territory. However, in reality, apart from planting more trees, we don't have any short-term options to remove emissions from the atmosphere. And even a massive expansion in forestry would only have a small effect compared to today's emissions. Furthermore, shutting down factories in the UK doesn't make any change to global emissions, and may make them worse if we import goods from countries with less efficient processes.
That's actually surprising them to see that them admit that trees soak up carbon, and that actually shipping industry out isn't a carbon mitigation strategy. But of course, they would only ever shroud reasonable assertions like that and the radicalism of like an absolute zero sort of framework is really funny.
This is just them, kind of done it. This isn't them saying this isn't going to work. This is them saying that we should. This is going to be terrible, but we should do it anyway.
Well, no.
This could very easily be like an anti-climate change report. It's
these
so
are
wild.
Admissions that you wouldn't expect to have.
Yeah.
In some of the net zero stuff, because they would be alongside other bits that you would be able to pick apart and contradict.
The problem is that this stuff is so obvious; they have to say it.
Yes.
They have to come out and actually study it. Otherwise, someone in industry is going to pipe up very loudly and absolutely savage them in the public, which is what they don't want. They don't want some actual well-connected person in the British establishment.
Look at the next line as well. Public concern about the climate is too well informed to be sidelined by political trickery or definitions. There's the same thing Tony Blair was saying.
Yes, this has a lot of the same language in it, but from a slightly more sober perspective.
Also, the too well informed.
Yeah. Very funny.
They didn't think anyone outside of their wee workshop group was going to read this, did they?
In writing this report, we have therefore assumed that the target of zero emissions is absolute. There is no negative emissions option or meaningful carbon offsets. Absolute zero means zero emissions. The UK is responsible for all emissions caused by its purchasing, including imported goods, international flights and shipping. This is what, again, an earnest attempt at net zero would look like. Again, a zero carbon economy really is like full Pol Pot dirt farmer, though. So if you go to this next section, which is absolutely amazing in its language, and I'll show you a diagram they have here as well, which basically just shows that you have to end most forms of transport and agriculture in this, but... you know what? I will just read it to you.
I can go through this bit if you want. The two big challenges we face with an all-electric future are flying and shipping. Although there are lots of new ideas about electric planes, lol, they won't be operating at commercial scales within 30 years. So zero emissions means that for some period, we'll all stop using aeroplanes. Shipping is more challenging. Although there are a few military ships run by nuclear reactors, we currently don't have any large electric merchant ships. Large electric merchant ships.
That's not true, actually. Russia still has a nuclear-powered, technically merchant navy vessel, but we don't talk about that one because it doesn't really work very well.
Yes.
But we depend strongly on shipping for imported food and goods.
In addition, obeying the law of our Climate Change Act requires that we stop doing anything that causes emissions regardless of its energy source, which basically gives you one option, destruction.
This requires we stop eating beef and lamb, ruminants who release methane as they digest grass, and already many have started to switch to more vegetarian diets. That's just not them saying eat less meat. It's just like, there will be no beef.
Yeah, we're not going to give it to you.
Which,
it
by the way, is a euphemism, because that means there will be no sheep and cows.
There will be no milk.
Yeah.
There will be no cheese.
Yeah.
There will be no natural fat to cook in.
Yes. That is
will be no leather. Yes. There will be no cotton. There will be no wool.
Sorry, there will be no wool. Yeah. It's them just saying that there will not be animal products in Britain in 2050 if you enforce the Climate Change Act, which, by the way, as we'll get to later, is enforceable by the courts. The courts can make them do this. However, the most difficult problem is cement. Making cement releases emissions regardless of how it's powered. There are currently no alternative options available at scale, and we don't know how to install new renewables or make new energy-efficient buildings without
This is like the one that was on... someone had shared it in I think it was the Welsh Mafia chat at some point last week about how they were trying to decarbonise the steel industry.
Yeah. Which is...
You don't make steel?
I believe steel is in here as well. They basically talk about the steel industry. Construction. Here's key messages for industrial
sector. Steel sector. All existing forms of blast furnace production, which are already under great pressure due to global overcapacity, are not compatible with zero emissions. However, recycling powered by renewables has tremendous opportunities for growth, exploiting the fact that steel scrap supply will treble in the next 30 years. Yeah, we're going to scrap everyone's motors so there'll be plenty of steel, problem solved.
Here we go. Cement sector. All existing forms of cement production are incompatible with zero emissions. No cement.
No mining. No trains. No aviation. Beef and lamb phased out by 2050.
Aviation. There is no options for zero emissions. Where is it? International freight. We currently have no non-emitting freight ships.
But look at even the... Let's go back down for a second.
Yeah.
The food one. You know, they're talking about beef and lamb phased out by 2050 and replaced by greatly expanded demand for vegetarian food. That's coy on its own. But as you've said, and we're going to point out in a second, there are already court orders that mean if they try and implement these strategies and mitigate carbon dioxide in the process, that will be upended.
Well,
so how do they go about making, you know, billions of calories of energy-dense food every day without using more carbon than it does to, like, make the already pre-existing sheep eat from the grass fields that are there?
This is just the net zero's unworkable report, really.
No, I know, it's just, it goes to show how obvious the unworkable aspects of
it's
are.
It's extremely obvious. 2050, absolute zero. Road use at 60% of 2020 levels. Through reducing distance travel and reducing vehicle, basically 40, but only 60% of people will drive.
That's 60%.
Who drive now?
60% of 2020 levels.
Yes.
What's that compared to 2010 or 2000?
Of course, yes. Road use at 60% of 2020 levels. So that's basically half of people taken off the roads. Electric trains, the preferred mode of travel for people and freight over all significant distances, but without steel production. This is them talking about flying and shipping. There'll be no flying and shipping. It says before that, 2030 to 2049, all remaining airports close. All shipping declines to zero.
Programmed to provide all interior heat with heat pumps and energy retrofits
for all buildings.
Electrification of all appliances and reduction. Beef and lamb phased out. What's the end bit of the food one?
Energy available for fertilizing, transporting, cooking increases with zero emissions of electricity.
And then we go back a second.
So the beef doesn't come back.
Yeah. And then we've got like the construction one at the bottom, which if you got like the 2030-49 one, looked fucking hilarious. Iron ore and limestone phased out while metal scrap supply chain expands greatly. So yeah, no materials, no food, no shipping.
No limestone, no iron ore. This is them telling us that we are going to...
All energy supply is now non-emitting electricity.
That is this image. I can just replace it with Frank you here. Welcome to the eco fields.
Anyway, that's enough of this.
Anyway, I think you get an idea here. Again, fossil fuels. No fossil fuels. No trains. No planes. No beef. No wool. No leather. No milk. No cheese. No limestone. No iron ore.
Well, no, it's all right.
No steel.
They're just going to invent cement replacements.
Again, that
asbestos. There we go.
Yeah, that is the positioning, though. That this is the sober report about what net zero would look like if it was applied earnestly.
The implicit thing as well here about naval and aeroplane stuff is that this will be a remit for the military and the military only.
Yes. Yeah, military isn't mentioned here, is it?
No, so we'll let you all mull over one.
Yeah, riddle me that one. And of course, all of this is enforceable by law. Court orders UK government to explain how net zero policies will reach targets. Again, they can't. That's the whole point. The whole point is that they can't. And it will bring forth further and further and further arbitration on the part of the UK government.
I think I mentioned this as well elsewhere. I'm not exactly sure where I put it, but think also about how the implementation of a lot of this stuff leaves infinite scope for corruption charges.
Yes.
And you're essentially damned if you do, damned if you don't. you go whole hog and absolute zero and you get done for being a climate extremist.
Yeah.
Or you pussyfoot on it because you think you can get away with doing what the managerial class at the top are doing and you get done for being corrupt and not implementing a net zero strategy possible. It's like a perfect communism kind of thing.
It is.
You can always at any point be shown to be going too far or not far enough.
That, again, is the point of it. And I just want to highlight as well that, yes, you put here, exciting new technology options are being developed. It will take a long time to deploy them, and they won't be operating at scale within 30 years. It does highlight the fact that the future tech is a lot more in the future than we are being led to believe. But that's kind of by the by. Again, these are the big asks that are already being replaced by what we talked about earlier, which is the sensible compromise. The idea is that the current crop of politicians will save us from the Malthusian net zero disaster by we'll just have as little carbon as possible. There are no viable electrical haulage vehicles. This would simply be hauling their own battery. Energy density is too low compared to combustion. So the link we talked about earlier, the German car industry, that's what that's about. In that, they know that this is incompatible with reality. But what they don't want to say is why it's incompatible with reality. I mean, there's another report here from the same group called Minus 45. And even that has, you know, the change required by 2030. Apparently by 2030, you'll have to have zero carbon public procurement contracts.
All beef, lamb, and dairy consumption ends, replaced by new diets.
That's by 2030. This is supposed to be how Britain looks 7 years, according to the Climate Change Act.
Movement towards a complete material and waste recovery where all waste is minimised and directly towards recycling and reuse. Do we not already do this?
We attempt to, yes.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any more sources we'll go over exactly. I know you've got a little bit here to finish.
I just say that also energy production that's predicated on wind and solar will lead to sustained blackouts and in many places will lead to incidents of mass death.
Oh, yeah.
And that is what the science TM says. This is a report. This is a study called Meteorological Conditions Leading to Extreme Low Variable Renewable Energy Production and Extreme High Energy Shortfall. Which is what we know. The wind doesn't blow all the time. The sun doesn't shine all the time. You can't run a country on wind and sunshine.
Exactly.
That is just the cold, hard truth of reality. But we're not here to convince you of that. We're here to convince you of the fact that your leaders already know that.
Well, yeah.
So what are they doing?
There's the point you've got here, which I think is one some people still haven't fully grasped. Making arguments about the validity of climate change is pointless. It's just as making medical arguments about COVID lockdowns were pointless. Everyone in a high enough position of power to enact change knows these arguments are not in earnest. They already know it's all fake, and you can glean that fact from their actions.
Their actions and inactions, yes, as well. They would actually have disappeared into a bunker by now.
Yeah.
That was my point on COVID as well, that if this was the big one, if this actually was a Spanish flu,
you'd have never seen Boris Johnson.
You'd all just gone. You'd wake up and everyone would be gone.
What, it'd be like that thing from like the films where you've got like the president and like the fake White House with a gas mask on, with a gold leaf Bible book pretending that everything's okay.
Yeah.
And there would be no disease, there would be no climate change, there would be no crisis, because the last thing they would want to do is declare a crisis, be presumed as the people in control of making sure the crisis goes away and being unable to do anything about it.
Yes.
No unpre-solved crisis is ever announced.
No.
That's why we'll never have the crisis of solar flares or the crisis of modernity, because they can't fix it and they aren't interested in doing so. Pointing out the fact that it is impossible to electrify the transport system will fall on deaf ears, because they don't really want you to replace your car with an electric one. They don't want non-party aligned people to have cars. And we already know this in China.
Yeah.
If you've got a driving license and you have a car and you have insurance, you still need to put in a request to the Central Bureau, you know, months in advance. I want to drive on the 21st of September. Can you put me in? And maybe on that day you'll be given the permit to drive.
Yes.
For some sort of purposes that are either diplomatic or business. it will quite literally be Cars for the People, Comrade, where the most essential workers are given the limited supply of global cars and any other forms of mobility. And we can presume that for military purposes, carting around in big nuclear-powered warships, submarines, and big freight aeroplanes will probably still be the norm.
Yes, it will be. You just won't be doing it. As we talked about during our, you know, what becomes of the Zuma stream and also our UBI stream, the managerial class view the general population and their jobs as immaterial. They rightly understand that the general population on aggregate doesn't do anything productive and hasn't done anything productive since about 1945. For reasons that will become clear if you watch our democratization series. Equally, pointing out the fact that construction cannot happen in a net zero world is pointless. The purpose is to have absolute control over all economic activity on a granular level by handing out carbon permits as a form of close management. The arbitration is the point. Net zero is simply the climate version of zero COVID, and it is meant to be as painful as possible to extract compromises out of those subject to it.
I don't think we have anything else really to add there. If the point has not come across through those, then I don't have much else to say to you.
I will say that this stream does interlock with a lot of our older streams.
Oh, indeed.
If you would like to go back and have a look at some of our other stuff, again, we do have the archives over on Anti-Politics. I would advise people to look at the Skill Collapse one, to look at your one, which is the Master Red Pill.
The Conservative, Gavin.
Internet's content, all of that stuff is quite evergreen. We don't tend to do a lot of hot button issues on the Substack. So do go over there, do look at that, do go through our back catalogue, because again, there will be more of it when we have time, but we barely have time really to research many of these streams. Another thing I would say is if you do want to go back on the YouTube channel, just do scroll down the live stream section. You will find a lot of our kind of eco stuff. I might try and put some playlists together at some point.
Yeah, because there is ones like the Green Capitalism one and the yes. Demobilization stuff sits rather well. I think we've got a couple of chats to read before we go.
We do. We have at least one here.
I think there was another one we missed earlier on. Christian gave us $5.
Oh, we already read that one.
Fair enough.
Thank you again, Christian. Anagog of Arwiger.
Aranog and Arwiger.
Alright,
I believe
okay.
That is.
Isn't electricity, by the laws of thermodynamics, always going to be less efficient than combustion engines / oil if you try to scale it up nationwide?
Yes.
It's a transmission problem. Again, I would encourage people to read around all of this, because if you need convincing that net zero is possible, then I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. We're mostly here to try and inform people that they already know it doesn't work. Making arguments about net zero from a scientific point of view is a political non-starter, because all of these people who are in a position to know what they're doing, are in a position to move things around, are not incompetent. We've been over this at great length, and they know that this is a big ask, and, you know, a huge ask and big take situation, shall I say. Some of the more juicy implications of this entire process we'll be going over on our stream on Wednesday, which is how this relates to effectively the coming fake war with China.
Well, I was going to say, are we want to do that as the Wednesday stream, or is there enough in there that it might require a Monday number?
I think that we can do it in a quite an efficient manner with the stuff we've set up here.
Cool.
Because we won't have to talk about a lot of the net zero stuff directly. We can just talk about the policy stuff in the raw. Again, thank you to everyone who came to tune in. We try and make these streams relatively efficient, especially for people watching on the VOD. So we do try and keep them under an hour and a half when we can. We don't really worry about length here.
I will say as well, thank you to what seems to be a sort of cohort of another sort of 500,000 people or so that seem to pick up on the VODs over the last
yes.
month or so. It's quite nice, actually. It was when we did that Zoomer stream last week, and I woke up in the morning, it was like, oh, it's almost nearly 2,000 views. Like
it's quite
reassuring.
Yes, and thank you, Paul Moosefoot, for the $10 there. I like nets full of fish, not net zero. That's That's a very, very good point there. But I hope this has been illuminating for you. Again, we try not to blather on too much, and we have done quite a lot of background information if you want to look at some of the more granular policy stuff in terms of the quote-unquote Global South, because that's what the deglobalization stuff is about. And again, that will rear its ugly head next week. I may or may not roll some of the nuclear stuff into that. A lot of people ask me about nuclear energy. I put out some stuff on Twitter about them. I might just make a separate video at some point, because it's more of a 15-20 minute discussion rather than a full stream.
I see, that's where all the views come from. Jay says he watches every stream 1,000 times. Oh. Keep at it, mate.
Thank you for that, Yiz. Fun stream as usual. Thank you, Scott and Evelyn. Thank you. And again, it's nice to see all the regulars again. Thank you to all of our members. If you do want to support us on a recurring basis, a YouTube membership is one of the best ways.
If I might say one last thing as well, I notice there is more of a tendency for people to share these streams around when other people are discussing these topics. So please keep doing that, because if anything, it might be one of the few things that does bring more or more interesting eyes onto what we're doing. So I don't know. I suppose we say thank you for everyone who's shown up the stream again this evening, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
Yep. Good night, guys.
Good night.